Rules Committee. We may go into work session for executive appointments, depending upon whether we get a quorum or not this morning. If not, we'll probably set those over till next Tuesday. As most of you know, we're here to hear Senate Bill 849. There are amendments drafted yesterday afternoon, and they are done in time for the hearing. I would ask the committee administrator to tell us a little about the bill, and then I would ask the first panel of witnesses to come on up. That would be Senator Richard Devlin, Attorney General Hardy Myers, and Representative Carolyn Tomei. And Mr. Attorney General, come on up. I would ask the three of you, as much as I appreciate your presence here, is that we have a number of folks in the audience and ask that you keep your comments brief. But before you start, Ms. Harris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 849 expands the statutory definition of practice of pharmacy to include the authority to dispense emergency contraceptive pills without a prescription and in accordance with a written protocol established by a physician or nurse practitioner licensed to prescribe drugs. Protocol is defined under the language of the bill as a written agreement in which a physician or nurse practitioner licensed to prescribe drugs authorizes a pharmacist or group of pharmacists to initiate or modify drug therapy involving emergency contraceptive pills.
Great. Thank you very much. Take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member of the committee present.
And we are, I think, open a public hearing on Senate Bill 849, and we are officially in subcommittee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. I am here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 849. This bill that I introduced allows pharmacists to prescribe and dispense emergency contraceptives through a collaborative drug therapy agreement between a pharmacist and a physician or a nurse practitioner who is licensed to prescribe drugs. 849 has been requested by the Attorney General Sexual Assault Task Force, and the Attorney General has told me that he would like to come up a little bit later with a member of his staff. As others will testify far more eloquently than me, this issue is highly important to victims of sexual assault if they find themselves with limited access to a physician care or unable to seek care within the 72 hours time required for emergency contraception to be effective. Emergency contraception provides victims of sexual assault a safe and effective option to protect themselves as established by the American Medical Association and the Federal Drug Administration. Seven states currently allow pharmacists to dispose emergency contraceptions, including Washington and California. Eight other states have legislation pending this session. The current need for a woman to get a prescription from her provider makes emergency contraception difficult to obtain in a timely manner. In order to be effective, emergency contraception, as indicated, must be taken within 72 hours. This creates a problem for women living in communities where there are long distances to a physician. This also creates a problem in instances when the primary physician is unavailable within the recommended amount of time due to any range of reasons. It is very important, Madam Chair, for women to have immediate access to emergency contraception, especially in cases such as rape or sexual assault. This issue has been raised. There has been an issue raised about this bill, which I believe the committee administrator will address, that some people have construed portions of this bill to potentially be interpreted to bar a pharmacist from actually dispensing EC, even if the party walks in with a prescription from a physician. We do not believe that is the case, but we have had an amendment drafted to specifically address that issue to make sure that no one makes that interpretation. Madam Chair, in closing, because there are so many people here, I urge you to support SB 849 and the members of the committee to do likewise, allowing women in the state of Oregon access to emergency contraceptives.
Thank you. Representative Tomei, welcome.
Thank you, Senator.
Chair Brown, representative.
Chair Brown and member of the committee. For the record, I am State Representative Carolyn Tomei, representing House District 41, and Senator Brown is my senator, and she is co-chair with me of the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance, and Senate Bill 849 is part of our legislative package. This bill allows a woman to acquire emergency contraception pills directly from the pharmacist. Urgent access is critical, even though the pills can be taken for up to 72 hours, because they are most effective if taken within 12 hours. And colleagues, I want to state for the record that emergency contraception is not abortion and should not be wrapped up in the abortion debate at all. According to all recognized medical literature, emergency contraception will not disrupt an established pregnancy. Emergency contraception is a backup method to a woman's regular form of birth control. It's important to note that over 50% of all pregnancies in Oregon are unintended. Almost 1 in 5 Oregon women report having been victim of a completed or attempted rape. Emergency contraception offers a safe, effective, and humane option for sexual assault victims in Oregon. The state of Oregon, as Senator mentioned earlier, has adopted urgent access to emergency contraception, and in the first year, 1,200 pharmacists provided emergency contraception to more than 12,000 women, preventing an estimated 900 unplanned pregnancies. Colleagues, women in Oregon deserve urgent access to emergency contraception. I urge you to support Senate Bill 849. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Tomei, just to clarify again for the record, what we're talking about here is not RU 486, and it is not an abortifacient. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Senator.
Thank you. Any other questions for these two? Thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. Next up, I have Mary Sparrett and Paul DePerry. Guess they're not here. All right. Dr. Jeff Jensen. Denise Washington. And I think it's Representative Barkhurst, but I don't see him either, so... Oh, sorry. Phyllis Barkhurst. Come on up. It's Jeff Barker, not Barkhurst anyway. It's a slow morning for me. And the Attorney General, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Hardy Myers, Attorney General. It's my privilege to chair the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force, created in 1999. And one of its lines of activity is to work for legislation that will be of benefit to victims of sexual assault in Oregon. And this bill is an outgrowth of one of the products of that kind of commitment by the task force. The task force was pleased to request its introduction. And at this time, I'd like to ask if you'd be agreeable, Madam Chair, to have Phyllis Barkhurst, the task force's executive director, comment briefly about the bill.
Thank you. And welcome. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Senator Brown. My name is Phyllis Barkhurst. I'm the executive director of the Attorney General's Sexual Assault Task Force, although I did like the sound of being called Representative Barkhurst. I'm here today, and I don't want to repeat what Senator Devlin and Representative Tomei said, but I want to just briefly state why we requested this bill before the Senate and talk about things that maybe people don't know. In the last legislative session in 2003, the task force was successful in working with the legislature in passing a bill that created a sexual assault victims emergency medical response fund through the state, and as part of that fund, recognized the need for emergency contraception to be available to rape survivors, and indeed it's one of the services that is paid for when someone goes to emergency rooms for care. What we didn't cover last session or haven't had the chance to address is the fact that more than 40% of rape survivors don't go anywhere in the aftermath of sexual assault for care. And so we want to make sure that there is an accessible way, because there's a high incidence of pregnancy from sexual assault, that there's a way for people to have access to emergency contraception. So of the 300,000 women raped annually, more than 32,000 become pregnant as a result. And all of these statistics I'm giving, they're cited in the written testimony I've turned in. And what the research also shows is that 88% of those pregnancies could be successfully addressed with emergency contraception if they were accessible to victims. And so the research has been really clear in several arenas. One, that 40% of rape victims and incest survivors do not go and seek care or assistance in the aftermath because of their own need to keep it private and the need and want to have private access to emergency contraception without having to label themselves rape victims is also a need. Becoming pregnant from a rape adds to the trauma. Having the fear that you may be pregnant from a rape also adds to the trauma. So this we support this particular bill because we believe it adds an avenue that's unavailable anywhere else by creating that privacy so a victim does not have to identify themselves as a rape survivor in order to have access. And it takes away the barriers that are in place now. We believe we have successfully addressed options for people who go to and already have relationships with their medical providers and or go to emergency rooms. So this bill would take care of rape and incest survivors who feel like or have too many barriers to finding access to emergency contraception anywhere else. And I just want to end with a quote from an Oregon rape survivor who was impregnated by her rapist who told me and who said, "I believe it's important that women know of all the options and are supported in being free to choose. Rape takes away choice. The sooner this is reinstated, the better," in referring to her own experience of being impregnated after a rape. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thanks for your attention. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you here this morning. My name is Jeff Jensen. I am Leon Spiroff Endowed Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Oregon Health and Science University. I direct Women's Health Research Unit at OHSU. I am an affiliate scientist at the Oregon Regional Primate Center, where I do research in contraception. And I'm also an associate professor of public health and preventative medicine. Therefore, I thought I'm qualified as a clinician scientist to be able to give you some testimony in support of Senate Bill 849. As we've established, Senate Bill 849 would allow women to obtain emergency contraceptive pills directly from a pharmacist without a doctor's appointment or a doctor's prescription. It would, on a voluntary basis, permit what is known as collaborative therapy agreements between physicians and pharmacists. Emergency contraception has been available for more than 25 years. We know over half of all pregnancies are unintended at conception. About half of these occur among contraceptive users, and half occur among women who are not using any method at the time they're having intercourse. Emergency contraception could theoretically prevent about 1.7 million unintended pregnancies and over 800,000 abortions nationwide. It's a very safe and very effective method of contraception. In fact, with the Plan B, progestin-only emergency contraception, there are no medical contraindications to use, and this is why the FDA voted overwhelmingly to approve over-the-counter status for EC. I specifically want to talk to you about how emergency contraception works. There's two types. There's combined hormone emergency contraception therapy. This is taken in two doses, 12 hours apart, and there's progestin-only emergency contraceptive pills. These are products including the FDA-approved product, Plan B. This can be taken either in one or two dosages. If there's two dosages, the product is taken 12 hours apart. Emergency contraceptive pills reduce the risk of pregnancy, and the sooner they're used, the more effective they are. So it makes very good sense that we need to provide access to this product as soon, as close to the episode of unprotected intercourse as possible. They work best if taken within 72 hours. They may be effective up to 120 hours. And with Plan B, the effectiveness is almost 90%. So this is extremely encouraging in our efforts to reduce unintended pregnancy. I really want to emphasize that emergency contraceptive pills don't affect an existing pregnancy. There's no evidence to suggest that this product is abortifacient. Again, according to the Food and Drug Administration, emergency contraceptive pills are most effective if the woman is pregnant. Are not effective if the woman is pregnant. They act by delay. delaying or inhibiting ovulation and are altering tubal transport of sperm or ova, thereby inhibiting fertilization. They also alter the endometrium and therefore may inhibit implantation, but that's probably a rare mechanism. The clinical studies that have been done have determined that most often emergency contraceptive pills reduce the risk of pregnancy by inhibiting ovulation. The most current research suggests that emergency contraceptions only work by preventing ovulation or fertilization, and the effect of implantation is probably very, very little. Thus, emergency contraception reduces the risk of pregnancy and helps prevent the need for abortion, and there's no biologic evidence that suggests that support the mechanism of emergency contraception, in fact, induces an abortion. So I'd like to share also that there have been several recent studies that have found that providing women with access to emergency contraception does not encourage them to engage in risky sexual behaviors, as some critics allege. A recent study done at University of California, Berkeley Center for Reproductive Health Research concluded that women who have easier access to emergency contraceptive pills are more likely to use them if needed, and they're not less likely to use other more effective methods of contraception. So women do not increase their level of risk for pregnancy or their risk of engaging in unprotected sex if they have access to emergency contraception. So I'd be happy to take any questions you would have from my perspective as a clinician scientist about emergency contraception.
Thank you. Dr. Jensen, thanks for joining us. I was going to say, Representative Barkhurst, you're going to be there forever. Thanks for your work on this issue, and Mr. Attorney General, we really appreciate your leadership. Any questions from the panel? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. The bill seeks to change the rules of pharmacy. How does someone get emergency contraception now?
Like speaking as a physician?
Anyone on the panel.
Well, I have personal experience with this, so I can tell you what would be required for a woman to obtain emergency contraception is that she call her licensed healthcare provider, physician or nurse practitioner, or make an appointment to be seen. Depending upon the scope of the practice, that person may wish to see the individual in the office for an office visit, which also generates a charge. Prescription would then be written and brought to a pharmacist. A pharmacist then would have to find one who was willing, that not only had the product available, but also was willing to dispense the product. I can share an amusing anecdote, because I can imagine you're a sports fan there, you're looking at the magazines and things. On Super Bowl Sunday last year, I was called right before halftime, actually a year ago, 2004, and you know all the scoring occurred in the last 2 minutes before the half. A woman called and said that the condom had broken, she needed emergency contraception. I called the pharmacist to order emergency contraception, and the pharmacist that I spoke to would not dispense the product, not because the product wasn't in the pharmacy, but because she decided that she didn't want to dispense it to the patient. I had to call three pharmacies before I was able to fill that prescription for that individual patient. So there are many barriers that exist. Emergency contraception is safer than fire extinguishers. Those are available over the counter without any difficulty. So there are many barriers that exist for individuals obtaining emergency contraceptive prescriptions and also having the product dispensed.
Senator Brown, may I?
Sure.
Senator Atkinson, also in emergency rooms, in cases where sexual assault victims or incest victims come to emergency rooms, they get the prescription and get it filled in most hospitals right then and there and receive the emergency contraception. But it also varies from hospital to hospital, and some hospitals will give a prescription and have the victim go somewhere else to get it filled.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not consistent across the state.
Yeah.
Senator Atkinson.
Question of staff, is there, under this law, could any, like if a Catholic hospital did not want to participate, would they have the availability to not under this law?
My understanding, and I'm sure that someone on the panel can probably aid me in my explanation, but my understanding is that the ability to dispense emergency contraceptives pursuant to this bill arises from a voluntary collaborative agreement between a physician and a pharmacist, so I think the key word there is that this is a voluntary collaborative agreement, so I think there are people who wouldn't want to dispense the drugs, wouldn't have to, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, my understanding of the current law is that the pharmacist that refused to dispense product to my patient did so with full support of existing law according to her own decisions based upon her own interpretation of moral conscience.
Thank you.
So that's this legislation, I don't believe, has any provision that would change that.
Thank you. Senator Farinelli, did you have a question? Okay. Thank you all very much. Appreciate being here. I have no one signed up in opposition to the bill. Is there anyone in opposition to the bill that wishes to testify this morning? It's not your last chance. I just didn't have anyone. I'm trying to give both sides. Okay. Not seeing anybody jumping up. With that, I will turn to Tom Holt, if he's still in the room, Catherine Bradley, and Denise Washington.
Chair Brown and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Tom Holt, Executive Director of the Oregon State Pharmacy Association. We generally support the concept of the bill. However, there are some, we do have some issues with the drafting, and so we have amendments, dash one, and we also are going to talk about the dash two. And if you'll bear with me, what I'd like to do is just kind of walk through what these do and what the issues are. One, you know, what the bill does is allow, and I think this is to Senator Atkinson's question, a voluntary agreement between pharmacist and physician to have a protocol for the dispensing of emergency contraception. This is a practice that's fairly well established. It exists in several states. Washington State, our neighbor to the north, has been doing this for a number of years. In fact, we hear anecdotally that it's quite common for Oregon patients to travel some distance to get across the river to Washington to receive this service in pharmacies in Vancouver. So we don't really think at this point there's a question about, you know, whether this, you know, service is viable or should exist or not. It's something that's spreading through the country. Now, what our amendments do is fix, I think, some technical and substantive issues in relation to how we would regulate this. The Dash 1 amendment, the heart of this, would do a couple of things. One, we have a real issue with regulatory boards having on file copies of protocols. We think that would have a chilling effect on practitioners' willingness to participate if you have a regulatory board getting a copy of every single protocol. That would be unprecedented. No other healthcare service requires that. So we're suggesting the deletion of the language at the bottom of page one that requires the filing of the protocol with the Board of Medical Examiners and the Board of Pharmacy or the Board of Nursing. At the top of page two, lines 2 and 3, there's a provision that the pharmacist may not delegate any of the duties or responsibilities authorized in the section. Well, because what you're doing is amending the core practice of pharmacy, and among the things that pharmacists delegate to pharmacy staff, including licensed technicians, are things like labeling and record keeping, those sorts of things that are sort of mechanical functions of pharmacy. As written, that would require the pharmacists to do all those things, and we've spent a lot of years getting pharmacists out of that kind of stuff, so we want that out of the bill. And then further down, lines 25 to 28, we're also suggest deleting, and here's why. In theory, you could have a licensed practitioner for whom this would be in their scope of practice to engage in a protocol with a pharmacist on staff at a clinic. They're getting paid a salary. That's a form of compensation. If a part of their job duty is to, you know, manage these protocols, they'd be violating this act. So we would suggest deleting that language. And then lines 29 through 34, we think really violate an important principle in regulation of health professions. We have the various health boards with their expertise of their healthcare practitioners regulating their health professions. What this bill would do is have the Board of Medical Examiners regulating the practice of pharmacy. We think the Board of Pharmacy ought to regulate the practice of pharmacy in consultation, of course, with the other concerned boards. That is kind of generally how we have handled kind of cross-practice issues. Last session, for example, and there's another bill, I think, working its way through this session dealing with nurse practitioners and clinical nurse specialists dispensing prescription drugs. In that case, we worked out language where the Board of Nursing is the primary regulatory board, but they do it in consultation with the Board of Pharmacy, and there's other examples of that. The rest of the dash one really just kind of deals with the commas and dotting I's and crossing T's to deal with those core issues. The dash two deals with another technical issue, and that is, as written, the bill would only allow dispensing of emergency contraception if the pharmacist was engaged in a collaborative protocol with a physician. So if a person presented with a prescription, you could read this to say, well, too bad, we're not in a protocol, so we can't do anything for you. I don't think that's what anyone wants. So the dash two clarify that, in fact, if someone did present with a prescription under ordinary practice, they still could receive emergency contraception. So with the dash one and dash twos, we can be supportive of the bill.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate your very thorough and very helpful comments. And Sarah Ferraioli and I were talking, is that we think the bill was written by a physician. So, okay, next.
I do have a question, Madam Chair.
Sarah Ferraioli.
To me, it sounds like the solution to the problem would be to make easier the connection between physicians and pharmacists, or to grant the pharmacists the authority to prescribe this prescription. Is that what you're driving at?
Chair Brown, Sarah Ferraioli, that certainly would be a much simpler approach. But this bill also gets the same thing accomplished. But the pharmacy would have to get a physician to agree to a protocol. The broader approach would be to simply amend the practice of pharmacy to say a pharmacist can essentially prescribe emergency contraception. Obviously, I think we would think that's fine. I think there's other stakeholders who would have concern about the precedent of pharmacists prescribing, and it would raise some issues with getting the bill through the process.
Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ferriol. I think that was some very good questions.
I think that that answer contained an answer to another question, but let me ask it anyway.
We could bring Dr. Jensen up, too, if we need to.
Madam Chair, pharmacists currently have the authority to prescribe?
Chair Brown, Senator Ferraioli, that's a very good question. And the answer is yes and no.
Now you're beginning to sound like a doctor.
Yeah,
just kidding.
You're beginning to sound like a lawyer, maybe.
Some states do directly grant the authority to prescribe emergency contraception. Some states grant the authority to prescribe drugs generally, and then there's some limitations set under rule. New Mexico and California, for example.
Mr. Cole, could you give us an example of what, in states that do allow pharmacists to prescribe, what medication we're talking about?
Well,
what types of medication?
The three areas that I hear most about would be things like emergency contraception. Immunization practice is sometimes done under that authority. And short-term uses of antihistamines in the springtime. For typically about 2 weeks. So basically someone at onset could get that from a pharmacy and then go see their doctor to fulfill further follow-up. Now, here, I think we're more in line with where most of the states are. We would say pharmacists have the authority to prescribe over-the-counter medications all the time. That patients inquire about various conditions, and the pharmacist directs them to a medication. And really, in theory, that's the very same process as prescribing. Now, in the law, is that called prescribing? No. So otherwise, do we have the authority to prescribe? Other than initiating immunizations, no.
Thank you. Any further questions, Senator Perriel? Thank you. Next.
Chair Brown and Committee, my name is Catherine Bradley. I'm the administrator for the Office of Family Health. We are neutral on this bill, but I did want to bring in some fiscal considerations. Senator Devlin's office had asked us to take a look at whether there were any approximations of impacts of costs that we could make. We don't have any actual utilization data and couldn't get anything comparable from other states, but we wanted to bring up a couple of points for your consideration. Currently, a dose of EC ranges from $20 to $40, depending on the supplier. So if you want to look at the assumption that estimated costs that could be averted by prevented unintended pregnancies, the average cost of a private self-coverage woman for an unintended pregnancy is approximately $11,000 to $12,000. The average cost of OHP coverage for an unintended pregnancy for a woman is about $3,700. And we aren't able to offer any more cost estimates without actually having OHP and OMAP do a review, but that I think gives some context for the basic cost for a dose of EC and the cost of unintended pregnancies.
Ms. Bradley, I think what you're trying to tell us is that this will probably save us money if we were to pass the bill.
Yes, that would be our assumption.
Thank you. Any further questions? Ms. Washington, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Chair Brown and Vice Chair Ferrioli. My name is Denise Washington, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. OCDSV was established in 1978. It's a statewide support network for the domestic violence and rape crisis centers throughout Oregon who work every day to end domestic and sexual violence in our state. Most of you know a rape victim, and as many as one in three women will experience sexual violence in their lifetime. Rape, like other forms of sexual violence, is a violation of bodily integrity, autonomy, and sense of self. The experience erodes a woman's sense of trust and safety. Recovery from the trauma is a process that can take weeks, months, or even years. It's a difficult issue, but it shouldn't be. Rape victims deserve proper care, which includes complete information about treatment options, such as emergency contraception. This bill would increase the options for victims of sexual assault by allowing her to control to whom she reveals the assault. Victim advocates believe that healing from the trauma begins by the victim being able to make choices. A traumatized victim should not be made to reveal her sexual assault to anyone but those she chooses. In addition, many low-income women do not have the benefit of a personal physician. So this bill would allow many low-income women access to a full range of treatment options, even without having a personal physician. The option of going to a pharmacist to receive emergency contraception supports the victim. It empowers her to make the best decisions, and it begins the process of rebuilding her life one decision at a time. Therefore, I urge you to support this bill. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. Questions? Mr. Holt, Ms. Bradley, Ms. Washington, thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Anybody in the audience travel more than 100 miles to be here this morning? Okay. Must have a room full of Portlanders. No? Eugene?
Corvallis.
Great. Okay. Salem? Okay. Okay. Next on the list, I have Ms. Kathy Eaton, Mr. Scott Ballow, and Ms. Marcia Kelly. Go ahead, Ms. Eaton.
Yes, Chair Brown, Vice Chair Ferrioli. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the Governance Coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League has worked for equal rights and social reforms for the 85 years of our existence. The League is one of the first organizations to address issues such as laws to protect women and those which discriminate against them. Victims of violence and sexual abuse are among the most vulnerable in our population, and we need to support programs which give them assistance, particularly in emergencies. SB 849 would make access to emergency contraception much easier and less traumatic, particularly in situations which are fraught with trauma and fear. The bill is built in protections to ensure proper implementation of the laws, spelling out who can prescribe the drugs and the role of the pharmacist, and we would look favorably upon the amendments which have been proposed by the pharmacists. We have participated in the discussions of the Women's Health and Wellness Alliance as this measure was developed and its significance explained. The LEA believes that Senate Bill 849 is a necessary safeguard for women and urges the committee to vote it to the full Senate. Given today's society, it is certainly one of those measures whose time has come. Thank you for the opportunity to express our support.
Thank you. Mr. Bowell.
Good morning, Chair Brown, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Bowell, and I'm a volunteer board member of NARAL Pro-Choice Oregon. We represent over 5,000 members throughout the state, and I'm here today to urge your support of Senate Bill 849. You've heard, I'm going to skip most of this, you guys have heard most of what we have to say today. We all know that Oregon law currently requires a doctor's prescription. The biggest difficulty is not for women or couples who live in populated areas. This is really about rural access, and anything we can do to help achieve the choice that they need to avoid this unintended pregnancy and save the state money is a great thing. So, you know, I'm going to keep it short rather than go through written testimony. I know you guys don't need to sit here and listen to all of us. So thank you very much for your time. If you have any questions, please, we're happy to answer.
Thank you. Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly. I'm the lobbyist for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. Our member organizations include the American Association of University Women of Oregon, the Oregon Women's Political Caucus, the Oregon Older Women's League, Delta Kappa Gamma, the Salem YWCA, and the Oregon National Organization of Women. I always try to call it association. In addition, we have individual members. And I would remind Chair Ferrielli that we have members all over the state in AUW, including in Baker City and in his district who were concerned about this bill. I, too, like Scott, will not go through some of the things that have already been discussed. For the record, I could possibly clarify for Senator Atkinson what this would do for Catholic hospitals. Catholic hospitals sort of have a policy all over the board, but Directive 36 handed down by the Vatican states that in cases of sexual assault, a woman may receive EC from a Catholic provider. So I would be happy to provide the committee with more information on that. Again, this is a safe, proven anti-conception bill, not an anti-fortificant. And so we don't want it confused with RU 486.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Senator Ferrielli? No. Thank you very much. We appreciate you joining us. I have Tom Britton scheduled to testify. And anyone else in the audience wishing to testify? Let's set it over to next week. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Chair Brown and members of the committee. My name is Thomas Britton. I'm a pharmacist for Fred Meyer in Eugene, Oregon here. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you in favor of Senate Bill 849. I'm here to speak in favor of the bill because I believe it is paramount to improving women's access to emergency contraception and therefore improving women's health. And as a pharmacist, I can be on the front line of helping women protect themselves against unintended pregnancies. As we've heard already, the emergency contraception, or EC, can only be effective if women are informed about and have prompt access to this. And when used within 72 hours of unprotected intercourse, the EC can reduce the risk of pregnancy by 89%. When taken within 24 hours of unprotected intercourse, it will reduce the risk of pregnancy by 95%. For those that may be confused or concerned about the emergency contraception and its impact on established pregnancy, according to the FDA, in 1997, The EC is not effective if a woman is pregnant, and it acts by delaying or inhibiting ovulation and or by altering the tubal transport of sperm. And, I'm sorry to repeat that, but we've heard that already from a number of testifiers today about how the EC works. While we all hope that a woman who has been the victim of rape or incest will seek medical treatment from a physician, it often takes several days for her to feel ready to do so. And in that time, making EC available through a pharmacist would at least allow for the opportunity to seek prevention of pregnancy from her attack. In the case of contraceptive failure, pharmacists are often more readily available than a clinic or doctor's office that may not be open on the weekends or available in the more rural areas. Making this option available for pharmacists and physicians on a voluntary basis to establish this collaborative agreement, which will give us the opportunity to help women prevent unintended or crisis pregnancies, which will also ultimately lead to fewer abortions. As Representative Tomei already informed us, my colleagues to the north in Washington have already been successfully directly dispensing emergency contraception since 1998. In the first year of that program, 1,200 pharmacists and 146 pharmacies provided emergency contraception to more than 12,000 women. This is clearly demonstrates a need to increase access. I close my comment by urging you to support Senate Bill 849.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brent. Just a question. We're just talking about how difficult it is for women living in rural Oregon and just in terms of accessing a doctor over the weekends or whenever. Do you have a sense from any experiences you've had about the difficulties women may have in terms of getting a hold of a doctor on relatively short notice?
During the Super Bowl.
Unfortunately, it doesn't really need to be limited to rural areas. Even in Eugene, women have, or people in general have, after the office hours are closed, it's very difficult to get a physician actually on the phone. They've set up a number of barriers, and you talk to a triage nurse and this and that, and by that time, half the people just go, oh my God, I can't deal with it anymore.
Okay. I assume nurse practitioners can write a prescription for contraception. Okay. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Britton? Thanks for coming from Eugene this morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
We appreciate you being here. Anybody else wishing to testify on this bill? Okay. We're going to close the public hearing on this measure. For the audience's information, the chair intends to move the bill. We obviously don't have enough votes to move it this morning. My concern, however, is that I would like to talk with the Oregon Medical Association, some physicians, and the pharmacists and talk about some of the technical amendments to see if we can get agreement from everyone and make sure folks are okay with the technical amendments that the pharmacists have proposed, and then we're having conversations about whether we just go directly through the pharmacist. With that, we've closed the public hearing. We are going to take a brief recess and wait for the appearance of Senator Ringo to move some executive appointments. So we thank you all for being here this morning and anticipate this will be there. We'll be back in work session soon. So with that, we'll be in recess. Any sense of what Charlie is? Okay.
We're going to adjourn.
I'm going to record and show that I was here for a second.